Welcome to Beyond the Frontline Podcast, where your hosts, U.S. Air Force veterans, Donna Hoffmeyer and Jay Johnson, will help you transition from the front line to the home front. Listen every other Wednesday, as they will bring great conversations, resources, tips, and feel-good stories that will resonate and relate. Now, here's your hosts, Donna Hoffmeyer and Jay Johnson.
Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Beyond the Front Line. My name is Jay Johnson. You're one of your hosts of the program, and we are excited and always looking forward to bringing something of value to you. The listener sitting beside me is the one and only, I'm not going to call her the queen anymore. She takes it way too far out of control, but I am sitting with my partner in crime, the one, the only, Miss Donna Hoffmeyer.
I got back to partner in crime, huh?
Yeah. I don't know about this queen thing, Donna.
I don't know. I was liking it. My husband, on the other hand, rolled his eyes every time I mentioned it. So yeah. I don't know.
I guess I may have to buy Brian a pretty stiff bourbon.
I think that's ganging up. I don't think that's fair.
Well, I think it takes two or more just to wrangle you in. So That's all fair. What's going on since the last time we chatted? Life still is flying 1,000 miles an hour. What's happening?
Yes, it's insane right now. So kids are getting ready for school. Our district's one of the last to go back, which at first I thought, oh, that's good. And now I'm like a week and a half out, and I'm like, that's not good. Right. I'm ready for them to go back. They're ready to go back. And so we're a little tense right now.
Yeah, I have to tell you, my life is better now. I don't have to deal with getting out in the school traffic in the morning, fight through all the congestion, you know. So you've still got a few years of that to put up with.
I'm
enjoying staying off the roads when
actually we just were on the roads this morning to go check out a venue for a book event, and it was 8:30 this morning, and I'm like, oh, look, San Antonio traffic. Yeah. Yay. So yeah. No, it's going good. I'm actually moving forward with some of my startup, and I just did a big meeting for websites, and that was exciting, and kind of getting all that going, which kind of wraps into the series that we're on, right?
Yeah.
So we talked about startups, and we want to hit different aspects of it. And one of them that has always fascinated me is franchises, which is interesting because I don't have an interest in doing the franchise. I'm just interested in like how they work and how people would kind of get started. And
yeah, it's funny you say that, though, because I have this serialpreneur spirit rising up in me. And I still do occasionally think about what would it look like if I found an opportunity that was a franchise that I put my investment into and had someone else run it. So every once in a while, my mind still, I'm not giving up what I do, but I still think about other opportunities.
See, and now we have a guest that actually is probably like going, oh,
well, I'm gonna learn a few things.
You're going to learn, right. It rolls us into what we're doing. So one of these aspects on franchises, in my head, I thought, well, I mean, there's lots of people that have franchise, but how do they get to that? So I like did a little research, and then I found out there are these franchise recruiters. Mm-hmm. And so I went, oh, and I didn't know any. So I just went to LinkedIn, threw in franchise recruiters.
And that's how we got our guest today.
Boom. And now we have Gary Turnow with us.
Well, I'm excited because a question just weighed on my spirit that I'll hold for once he gets in and starts talking. But it just weighed on me, and I can't wait to ask it.
Well, let me introduce him properly and read a little bit of his bio. So Gary Turnow is the president of Integrity Business Options. He has almost 25 years of business ownership experience as both a franchisee and independent entrepreneur. He also has vast management executive sales experience with Fortune 500 companies. He has started businesses from the ground up and has been where you are today and talking to our audience. Gary has experience in the uncertainty and fear of investing your life savings, has been through the grassroots effort of exploring various franchise options. And what he wants you to know is whether you're the first-time business owner looking for that franchise match or the seasoned entrepreneur looking to diversify your business, Jay, Integrity Business Options will be ready to guide, consult, and explore all options available to you. So, with no further ado, Gary, welcome. I am so excited that you were willing to do this with us.
Thank you, Donna and Jay. And it's so nice to know I got a lead already. How about that?
Boom. Do I get commission off that?
We'll talk about that.
I'm already shrinking from what I said. Yeah, I'm already. No, I'm just kidding, Gary. I'm excited just to learn from you today. We really do appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. And I'm calling from Naples, Florida. And you mentioned going back to school. They already started here, I believe, Tuesday this week, mm-hmm. back to school. I don't have school age children anymore, but I did notice the signs up, school's back. I saw the buses, and here we go.
Yeah,
here we go.
Well, how are things down in Naples? I'm a little jealous, just so you know, because you're down there along the coastline, I'm sure, and you tend to get weather fronts that at least pop up, move in quickly, and then move out. We are on like a 90-day drought. We got a little bit of rain yesterday, but Naples is nice, right, Gary?
It is. We're in the rainy season. Every day, 2 o'clock, we may see some rain before we're done.
That's amazing.
Clouds roll in, and we get the 20-minute, half-hour showers, and then the sun comes back. Yep.
Wow, that's incredible.
That's awesome. Well, Gary, let's kind of – I read a little bit of your background. And so just for the audience's knowledge, like, how did you start as an entrepreneur? How did that lead you to franchise and entrepreneur – I mean, and franchise recruiter? So let's understand that first.
Well, yeah. So I'm a former franchisee. I've owned independent businesses. I owned a franchise. And how that happened, I relocated from upstate Pennsylvania to New Jersey, southern New Jersey, outside of Philadelphia. And we moved to an area that was just growing, exploding, residential, commercial, the whole area just was growing. And this was around 2000 or so. But I was working, employed, and I was getting that entrepreneurial itch again. I had had a business prior and then was working for somebody. But I wanted to get back into a business, and I was in this area that was just exploding. And I'm like, what kind of business can I open here? What does this area need with all this growth? So I started doing research, and I kept coming back to the area needed printing for small to medium-sized businesses, local print shops, and the shipping, right? The UPS, FedEx. So that was the good news. The bad news is I didn't know anything about any of those services. I mean, and as far as printing with a copy machine, I mean, I was the one that always hit start and jam the darn thing. So the good news was, you know, I found what the area needed. The bad news was I knew nothing about it. So that's when I decided, well, there's people out there that do and that will train me and support me. So that was franchising. So I looked into a couple different franchises that offered in that segment, did some research, and I ultimately got into one of the brands and got my training, got open support, and away I went. So within that franchise model, I got very engaged within the concept. I joined some of their national committees, right? They have a national marketing committee, education committee. So I got very engaged from day one and involved. And along with that, a couple years into being open, I also served on the National Advisory Council for the franchise. And I represented the Northeast part of the United States, the Northeastern states. And that is, being part of that advisory council, we would meet, there were 8 members, I believe, and we'd meet quarterly with the owners of the franchise at the headquarters. And that is where I got to see the franchising from a whole different perspective. You know, right. It's one thing to be the boots on the ground and running day to day, doing your business, running your business, but to see it from the other end really opened my eyes. And that's where my passion for franchising grew.
You also have a degree in marketing too, right? It's your bachelor's degree in marketing, which was helpful. I have to say it because I just think it's funny, from Slippery Rock, and we'll tease them, because it was known at one time for the number one party school. So I just think it's funny, marketing party school. That was cute.
Slippery Rock University, the number one party school. Back then it was a dry town too.
Oh, that's even better. Plymouth, New Hampshire. I'm from New Hampshire. I'm Plymouth State. They were the number one party school in New Hampshire. So,
you know, something I heard you say, Gary, that I kind of gravitated to when you were just talking about looking for this entrepreneurial opportunity. You talked about ended up in the copy business. And I heard you say there was a need. You know, some people have a passion inside of them and they go look for an opportunity to live that out. There is this other side, which is you may find a need, an unmet need, put yourself in a market, meet that need, be highly successful, and that could easily become one's passion. So right. How long were you in the copy business before you started to have this bent towards helping other people find franchises?
About 8 years. Eight years. And then I sold the business and relocated to Florida.
Okay.
And once we relocated to Florida, I started a property management business from the ground up, independent, not a franchise. So I started that property management business and it was growing, doing well, but I was missing franchising. It just kind of kept resurfacing and coming back to me. And I would be reading articles on franchise concepts that I was familiar with and stayed involved with the education part of it. But at that, and then at one point at a networking event, I met a guy who was a franchise consultant. I'm like, what the heck is that? Never heard of that. So he, you know, we had a nice conversation. We met offline somewhere again, had coffee or lunch or whatever we had. And to make a long story short, he helped get me involved. I had to go through some training to get certified. And that's what I did. But I still had that property management business. So once I became a franchise consultant, I couldn't put much time into it because all my focus was on my primary business. And again, to make a long story short, I sold that business, the property management, relocated. We moved. And at that point, I told my wife, you know, once we move, I'm jumping in full time, all in to the franchise consulting, investing in whatever software I need, to the investing in lead generation, everything I need to do to get into the business. And that was about 2.5-3 years ago.
What was it that you missed about franchising? Like what was it when you said I missed it? What was it that you missed?
I think a lot of it could have been the relationships too, because part of the power of a franchise is the relationships you build with fellow franchisees. So almost every day I'd be talking to another franchisee. I mean, there was a core that we had a solid relationship and we talked often and helped each other with our business. And so I missed that part of it, are those relationships, you know, with people going through the same thing that I was going through every day and just talking about it, talking through obstacles and issues and helping each other and helping people.
So community and problem solving, I mean, really, you were in on that. Go ahead, Jay. Sorry.
No, it's okay. So, you know, Gary, I'm sitting there thinking, I know there's got to be a lot. If you're going to consider finding a franchise, A to Z, these are things that you need to be aware of. I guess inside of that, we're looking forward to hearing you kind of talk about where someone would start. But it kind of takes me back to you. You can either go out there and spend a ton of time, I assume, doing all this research yourself, which I heard you say you kind of did at one point, or you can shorten the curve, I'm assuming, by going to a professional who lives it, breathes it, and is in it every single day like yourself. Is that the value for talking with somebody who's a franchise recruiter?
Yeah. And, you know, back when I did my research, I didn't have Mr. Google wasn't around to help. But anybody can Google franchising.
Sure.
And I always say 95% of people out there at one point or another think they want to be self-employed, right? They think it. I think maybe 5% of the people act on it, but almost everybody at one point thinks they want to be self-employed. So they can Google franchising and get 400 pages of stuff come up, and they can filter through all that trying to find what brand would be best for them, what industry, what product, what service. Or they can let me filter through all that stuff and find the brand that would be the best fit for them.
So what you kind of answered that question on that. What does that look like? So if Jay, I'm going to use Jay because he was the one that mentioned it. But if Jay pops over to you and says, hey, listen, like I'm interested in expanding my portfolio.
Yeah.
I want a franchise. And in his case, I want a franchise that I want somebody to run. I just want to initiate the franchise. What do you do with that person?
So what my process looks like. First, we just have an initial 10 to 15 minute call. Basically, why are we talking? You know, Jay, why is now a good time for you to start thinking about a franchise? Why now versus a year ago or next year? So we get into the why, maybe the pain points, and then I talk about what I do. And then from there, my next step, after we agree that, okay, we can explore together. Because what I do is I work with those individuals that are just open to exploring the possibilities of business ownership. And that's all we're doing. We're educating, exploring. Nobody's asking for money. Nobody's asking, you know, sign a franchise agreement or anything like that. So what I do, my next step is another call. And that call is longer. That's about an hour call. And that's where we're digging into what I call the creating the business profile. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're going to talk about, you know, maybe Jay's looking for something more part-time, semi-absentee, as opposed to all-in owner operator. So we're digging into those goals and objectives, digging into what you want your lifestyle to look like, your interests, I mean, your background, experience, skills that are transferable to a business, investment range you're comfortable with, much like a realtor. You know, I mean, a realtor says, tell me what level are we going to look at houses at? What's the limit? So I need some of that information as well. And then we talk about a lot of different industries, just trying to get a feel for maybe what industries do I absolutely not want anything to do with, or industries that I would love to see something in.
Yeah, so that brought up a couple of things for me that I'm just curious on. What is the low end, Gary, if there is such a thing? If somebody had X amount of money to invest, what would you say is the low end? There are some opportunities where you could get in at a really small amount, surprisingly, and they can, of course, I assume the ceiling is as high as one could imagine, but there's that threshold, right? How much do you have to invest? Kind of give the listeners an idea that there are, you know, some opportunities at a very moderate low end. And then when you said you're kind of having this conversation about building a profile, are you asking them things to kind of gather if they're looking for a business to business kind of opportunity, a business to consumer opportunity? Is that all part of it too?
Yep. B2B or B2C type of environment that they're comfortable working out of. So whether it's home based or mobile, it could be retail brick and mortar. It could be, you know, some brands require the franchisee to have some light industrial space. Mm. You don't need that prime visibility, but you can't work out of your house either. But, you know, so an industrial park or even a small office in an office park, in an office building. So we talk about that, talk about part-time semi-absentee or full-time owner operator, their objectives too. I mean, what are your goals for owning a business? Are you looking to create a legacy, generate wealth, build equity, scale a business, have family involved? And so I have a worksheet that I use, a questionnaire that guides me through the process. And you know, we go through all that. Typically 45 minutes to an hour.
That's good to know. And again, that question about what's the low end? What do you think?
Low end. So I would say the low end probably, and when I give an investment range, I'm all in everything, right? In franchise fee, training, software, everything. So I would say the low end, probably 10 grand. I have one or two brands I don't have a, there's not many brands down playing at that level, but there's a couple.
Doesn't Chick-fil-A play at that low end, but they are very, very, very scrutinous. That's always like
Chick-fil-A. Yeah. Surprisingly, the investment is low, but number one, they get like 8,000 applications a year and they select about 100 people a year to become franchisees. And, but they also take, I want to say like 55% of the gross profit. Yeah. So they're charging lower amount up front, but taking more off the back end.
So it still balances out either way. Yeah.
Yeah. And Chick-fil-A, very strict full-time owner operator, no part-time semi-absentee with Chick-fil-A.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Hey, Gary, you talked about people contacting you and how the process began. So there's this initial phone call, the why. Then there's this follow-up to build more of a profile to gauge what their interest is in, or to help them even narrow their interest. At what point are you being compensated, right? I think most people would want to know this. At what point is your time being valued?
You took my question.
Sorry.
We share a brain during this, trust me.
After I get the business profile, after that call, then I go to work, right? Then I do my search. So I represent around 500 different franchise brands in all different industries. And I know, and I hear it every day when I'm talking to people, whenever they hear the word franchise, the first thing that comes to their mind, the first industry, the first sector is what?
I'm going to ask. In my mind, it's Starbucks, Chick-fil-A, Taco Bell. Yeah, all food.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people I'm talking to, that's the first thing they think of. And then right away, the guard goes up. I want nothing to do. I'm not interested. I don't want anything to do with food. I don't. And in reality, food represents about 26% of all franchises out there. But so anyway, I represent over 500 brands in all different industries. So after I have that profile, then I go to work, then I do the search, execute my search of, you know, within those brands, within my portfolio. And I look to identify usually about five brands that I think are in alignment with the profile, that I think are a fit. And then once I have those brands identified, then the next call with the candidate, that's the fun call, right? That's when we're actually talking about specific brands. And let's say there's five. I usually anywhere from 3 to 6 I identify. But so we'll talk about the five brands, who the company is, what's the product, what's the service, what's their industry, why I think it's a fit for you. We talk about each one. And then at that point, any of those brands where the candidate has an interest to just learn more about the brand, that it piqued their interest, take another step, then we do that. So if out of five brands, there's three brands that piqued their interest, then we take those three brands and now we start that education due diligence process. I typically will get some more collateral material that I can send them about those three brands. But ultimately, though, to get information at a deeper level about these brands, they need to start having conversations with those franchisors. So I make those introductions of the candidate to those three franchisors.
So, Gary, I think I still want people to understand. I talk to people all the time. I am a coach, a trainer. I do a lot of motivational speaking. I always tell people, look, in many cases, information is free. Do your diligence researching. But in this case, somebody's hiring you to do the research. Right. So I know there's going to be compensation, I assume, when they buy but enter into a franchise agreement through you. But at any point up to this point, everything you've described, you're still just giving them your time or?
Yeah. So, and you did ask that earlier too, when do I get paid? And so I am paid by the brands that I represent. So the 500 brands in my portfolio, they pay me.
I see.
The candidate never pays me a penny to explore these possibilities and have me help walk them and navigate through that discovery process.
Fantastic.
Now, I only get paid when a candidate goes through that process and goes through all the different steps and ultimately finds the brand that they fall in love with. And they're at that point, okay, this is the one for me. How do I get in? What do I do? And then, so once they sign a franchise agreement and pay a franchise fee, then I get paid.
So this popped in my head when you were talking about it. And I don't want to get down the road, but I was just curious. Do you also help businesses that want to franchise? Do you help them go the other way?
Yeah. So,
and get them in your portfolio and teach them how to franchise?
So I do. I can. Yeah. I can work with that business that they've been open. They've proven their concept is successful, that it works. And now they want to hit growth mode. And right. You basically grow one of two ways, right? Organically, where the owner, you're opening every location and you're funding every location and you're hiring everybody and you're hiring managers. Or you can grow through franchising your brand and have franchisees pay you to run their locations.
I'm liking option B.
Yeah. Well, and really what that is, and I don't do that personally. So in my portfolio, I have access to companies that's what they do. They're not a franchise, right? They're not out there. What their role is they work with businesses that want to franchise their concept. So I make that introduction and those companies walk that business through every step needed, legal paperwork, whatever's needed to franchise their concept. And once again, I'm paid by that company. Again, the business owner I introduced doesn't pay me anything.
Gotcha.
And I do want to make another comment. You know, when I mentioned the franchisors are the ones that pay me, every franchise out there charges, their initial fee is called a franchise fee. They have an initial franchise fee. And I get typically a percentage of that franchise fee. But what's important to note is a franchisor cannot alter that franchise fee because the candidate's working with a consultant,
mm-hmm.
right? So if they're paying me, $10,000, they can't, you know, bump up that fee $10,000 to compensate for having to pay me.
That's a good point to make, though.
So it doesn't cost the candidate a penny more to work with a consultant broker than going about this on their own.
I think so I've got two things. One, just a comment, and then the next a question. To the listener, I think the value is, Gary just hit it, you've got somebody that understands the process really well, already connected to some really amazing opportunities, is going to do due diligence to assist you in finding potential and likely right opportunities based on what you've shared. And Gary, what I took away from that, this is still the comment, is you really are vested in them because the value to you, the benefit to you is finding the right fit, because if they find that and enter into it, that leads to compensation for you. So you're fully vested in helping people, right?
Right. It leads to compensation for me. And also if the candidate that I help get into a business, they get up and running and they're happy and they love their franchise and they love being a business owner, it may lead to some referrals too.
Absolutely.
It's all about referrals and leads too, right?
The power of networking.
Yeah.
We did a whole thing on networking. I don't want to rabbit hole this, but it's just interesting and I say this to the audience so they can kind of understand that I searched Gary out on LinkedIn, seriously put in when I figured out the term, franchise recruiters, Gary pops up. I was like, all right, reached out to him. He's like, yeah, let's do it. And then turns around and says, hey, I have a networking group that I belong to. Would you like to visit? Sure, why not? visit the networking group. Seriously, two people out of that with something with my business. And I was like, oh, and I'm already starting to, well, I will be when I come up for air, but we'll work with them on some specific areas in my business. So, I mean, it's like, you know, you just don't know. That's right. You really don't.
Yeah. You've got to genuinely be interested in relationship building, right? Understanding other people, the industry they're in. The question I had for you, Gary, back to these 500 businesses that you represent, how do they find you? How do you find them? Are you pretty discretionary when it comes to determining who you're going to help work with?
Yeah, great question. So I belong to an organization called the International Franchise Professionals Group. IFPG is what they go by, International Franchise Professional Group. And that's it's a membership franchise organization. So there's basically three legs to that IFPG stool, right? One are franchise consultant brokers that join IFPG. Another leg are franchisors that join IFPG. So the franchisors join to have access to the broker network. The brokers join to have access to get access to the franchisors. And then that third leg are suppliers or vendors that want to target either brokers, franchisors, or both with their product or service. So all three of those groups become members of IFPG. So IFPG has about, I don't even know the exact number, but I say 500 franchise brands that are members. That allows me to say I represent over 500 brands. IFPG, and really they negotiate the commission structure and everything. I don't ever get involved in negotiating what my payment is, what my commission is. It's already pre-negotiated by IFPG. So when we place a candidate, you know, I know how much the amount is and it is what it is, and I invoice them, and that's that.
So I think I told you at the when we pre-talked that the podcast is veteran focused, but not veteran exclusive. So all this information is helpful to anybody, but we really do like to put an emphasis onto the veterans. Yeah. And interestingly, I find out through discussion with you that you actually have a heavy focus on veterans. And so a couple of things come in my head. Why veterans, and what do you see in them that makes a good fit? And what are the challenges that you see the veterans experience when they're coming from the military out and deciding, I want a franchise?
Yep. So a lot of my marketing is targeted towards veterans. And so the advantage of franchising versus an independent business, some of the advantages, there's brand recognition, right? Possibly with the franchise, but there's already a system and a blueprint and a process that's in place and proven that it works. So veterans have proven over time that they know how to follow a system pretty successfully.
Mm-hmm.
So my franchisor partners, they all love working with veterans because of that, right? Because they know that typically the veterans will follow that system, follow that blueprint. And there's statistics out there that veterans have higher success rates in franchising than non-veterans. I don't know the exact number, but franchisors know that. So they target veterans. And also, to take that a step further, I mentioned that, you know, every franchise has a franchise fee that's part of an investment. Pretty much 90% of the franchises out there will offer veterans significant discounts off of that initial franchise fee as well.
That's awesome.
So because they know that veterans will follow the system and do well.
What do you see that the challenges that the veterans have that might be different than the civilians, or do they?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know about any specific challenges. It depends if they're just starting to transition into society, maybe back into society. Maybe they might not have the network within the community yet, but that remains to be seen.
Right.
That was our, I didn't mean to step on you, Gary.
Yeah.
That was Donna's and my focus, I think, on the networking episode. We're talking about right now, while you're serving, there is something outside of the installation you serve on. Get out there now and just start interacting, right? Whether you're involved in a chamber of commerce, a civic organization like Kiwanis or Rotary or who knows, but just get out there and interact. I think this kind of spurred from what you all were just talking about. How about the length of time, Gary, it takes? So let's say I'm on active duty still. I'm about a year, year and a half out from retirement. At what point should someone consider engaging you as a franchise recruiter to think I need to start this process because of the length of time it takes?
Yeah, probably 6 to 8 months. I mean, and it all depends too. If it ultimately is a brick and mortar concept, that might take a little longer of the process, because for obvious reasons, you have to find real estate, you have the build out, you have to get all the permits, all that stuff. So that brick and mortar sometimes takes a little bit longer, but any of the other concepts, whether home-based or mobile or industrial or office-based, within 6 months, they can be up and running.
Fantastic.
And I do want to add one more thing. You know, we talked about what a downside might be for a veteran, but another benefit too, if they are transitioning back into society, but they've been in the service for maybe 20, 25 years, and you guys would know this better than me, when they have their military pension. So they have that monthly income. Their health benefits, I believe, are all paid for, right? So that's the perfect scenario to get into a business, because you have that income stream coming in. You have the health benefits already in place, as opposed to maybe the corporate executive that's going to get into a business and just cold turkey leave their job, leave that income stream, and start building that business from scratch. So the vet that is getting that pension, at least they have that advantage. And that's a great asset to have, is that monthly income stream and the health benefits right off the bat while you're scaling a business.
So two questions come in my head. Do you ever see people on active duty start franchises? Like, I can see Guard and Reserve because they're part-time, but do you ever see like active duty people start franchises?
No. I just helped a young lady recently. She's in reserves.
Yeah.
She's in New York City and she's a teacher and then does reserves. And she actually got into a travel franchise on the lower end of the investment range. Yeah. But I helped her get into that concept about maybe a month ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see the Garden Reserve where that would be essentially pretty easy. I mean, active duty, I don't know how they would do it, but you never know, that person that's like the ultimate multitasker. And then my other question is, and I know this, I'm going to ask this question, I know you're going to be like, ooh, this is good, it can vary widely, but is there any data, like on average, how long a franchisee would expect to start, you know, going from starting to sustainable to making actually profit? Like, what is that?
So, yeah, it.
I know that's a hard. Well,
and here's another piece of that. So many people might not know this, that the franchise industry is regulated by the Federal Trade Commission.
Oh.
So the government's involved. And because of that, franchisors are not allowed to make any kind of earnings claims.
Hmm.
So they can't even, and I'm not allowed to either. So I can't, when I'm showing a concept to somebody, I'm not allowed to say, you know, with this concept, you'll be breaking even in 4 months or
making six figures in 2 days.
Yeah. And that's why the FTC got involved. So I guess back in the day, there were a lot of brands that were sugarcoating, you know, and enticing people to invest in their brand, but they are not allowed to make any kind of earnings claims, even, you know, when they can break even or scale, that's an earnings claim. So
well, it's funny you say that, because the reason why the question popped in my head was a friend of ours owns a franchise, and him and I just started talking one day at an event, and he made that comment. He's been in the business, goodness, 8-10 years, I guess, maybe. But he said it, he goes, boy, the franchise kept telling us, like, hold steady, be consistent, and it is going to come. Just keep being, and they provide support and all this stuff. And he said it was 3 years. And then he just told me, he's like, we just had our biggest quarter, like, ever this last quarter. It beat expectations. So yeah. So I was just curious if there was, like, stats, but if the FTC is like, shut your mouth, then I totally get it.
Yeah. But it's fair to assume that maybe a home-based business can scale faster and break even faster than brick and mortar.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the overhead. There's
right.
No inventory, there's no equipment, there's no rent.
Yeah.
So typically it's safe to assume that they might be able to scale up faster.
So Gary, one of the things I was thinking about when you're helping somebody and you're looking at franchise opportunities that may align with what they're wanting, do you find that some franchises are more strict in what they expect to be done and others are more loose? For instance, I know a lot of people that own franchises, actually, and I'm thinking of a few I've worked with even in the local area. And sometimes they say, well, corporate, meaning their headquarters, if you will, under their franchise, sent down this policy and now requires to do this. And I thought, are you kidding me? Like, why would they get down in the weeds on that level inside your business? And it just prompts me to ask you, when you're researching franchise opportunities, is that something that's in play? Is it only in play if someone asks, or do you just try to let them know, hey, they expect this to be meticulous, little variance, or this one you get in, they pretty much leave you alone and you get to kind of decide your day to day?
Yeah. So, you know, they're all working towards creating that brand consistency. Mm-hmm. And there are brands out there, especially in the food industry, like McDonald's, right? Or even Subway, require their franchisees to buy all their product from corporate. And so corporate's making money on that end, as well as the royalties that they charge franchisees. But, you know, hours of operation, all of that. But that's all. So I don't know if it'll answer your question, but I'll carry it a step further too. When I mentioned the Federal Trade Commission is involved, the Federal Trade Commission requires every year, every franchise out there, and there's 4,000 franchises, but every year, every single one, corporate, the franchisor, not the franchisees, have to file with the Federal Trade Commission what's called the Federal Disclosure Document, FDD. It's the Bible of every brand. That federal disclosure document is 23 sections long. And every section in the FDD has the same heading, okay? It's just the content of each section is specific to the brand.
Right.
So it's a couple hundred pages, but, and this kind of gets to your question, everything that the franchisor requires from the franchisee is all spelled out in the FDD. Hours of operation, must wear, you know, a logoed shirt, or must buy their product from us, and then everything that the franchisees is obligated to do is in the FDD as well. But, you know, we talk about the advantage of a franchise is that system is all in place. Well, what is that system? That's spelled out in the FDD. What's my training going to look like? That's another section in the FDD spells out all the training. The investment range is in section 7 of an FDD. And it gives a low end and a high end, and it itemizes everything that makes up an investment. And then what are my fees? The royalties is the word in the franchise industry that the franchisees pay, usually a percentage of gross revenue, might be 5, 6, 7%. That's spelled out in the FDD, what those royalties will be. And they cannot deviate from that. So sometimes I have a candidate that, you know, they're hotshot salesperson. Well, I'm going to negotiate the royalties. I'm going to negotiate. Well, they're not. You're not allowed. They have to charge what they tell the government they're going to charge.
Right.
Some of that stuff is, you know, is just not negotiable. And there's also candidates. Many times a candidate wants to get their attorney involved, right, to look at these documents and FDD. And I advise them, if you're going to have an attorney read this FDD, that's not negotiable. Make sure it's a franchise attorney, not your brother-in-law's divorce attorney that doesn't know the first thing about, because they're going to spend 3 hours redlining an FDD and it can't be changed. That leads to the branding and the consistency. It's all spelled out in that federal disclosure document that every year, every brand has to submit a new one.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Hey, Gary, what's the success rate? If that's the right way to say it, it may not be. Someone enters into a discussion with you, you filtered out, you know, are they really serious? Are they not? Someone enters, they're really serious. What's the success rate that you've experienced in getting someone placed or in an opportunity?
You mean my success rate?
Yeah. You know, do 80% of the people that talk to you end up in successfully purchasing? I know there's a lot more to it, but is there a way to?
Yeah. I wish 80%. I would say, I mean, with the business I'm in, 90% of the people do not do anything that I talk to.
Interesting.
This is a big decision, getting into a business, investing what could be your life savings. So in every situation when I'm working with somebody, at some point, fear is going to kick in. Reality is going to kick in. A spouse might kick in, you know, you're doing,
what? Or kick. Yeah.
Or kick. So really, yeah, most of the people that I work with, and I think it's a pretty standard industry average too, is, you know, that I have starting through my process, majority fall out.
So 10%.
For whatever reason, decide they want to just keep their job or look for a job or
They're fact finding, you're helping them gain greater clarity and awareness, and 10 out of every 100 pop out the other side having followed through, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times what happens, somebody has a bad day at work, the boss pisses them off,
and
can't sleep at night.
Sounds familiar.
2 a.m, sitting in their underwear and they Google franchising and... You know, and then I get the lead and then all of a sudden, like a couple days later or a week later, the boss is nice to them and they got a little bonus or, you know, now they're happy. And
I do miss that, Gary. I'm going to tell you, I mean, Donna and I kind of have fun talking about this. We both are entrepreneurs, have our own businesses, and I can't imagine ever working for someone ever again. Oh my God. I am jealous at times. I'm not going to lie when I hear someone else got this huge bonus or they got this, you know, huge opportunity that came because of where they're at, because I can't just do that necessarily.
I'm so startup that if I see anything in the green go into my account, I'm like, $10.
Yeah, my business is a little more mature, but it's coming for
it's
you.
It's coming. I just don't have patience. I'm like, all right.
So, Gary, any other advice? I mean, what haven't Donna and I touched on that you think is worthy of our listeners kind of having a basis of understanding?
So I have some statistics of franchising, you know, and franchising is such an important part of our economy in this country. And I have these statistics that the GDP, gross domestic product, franchising represents 3% of that in dollars. That translates to $501 billion generated in the franchise industry. Franchises out there employ about 8.5 million jobs, net gain of over 250,000 from 2021.
Oh, I bet, with COVID.
Yeah. Estimated by the end of this year, there will be almost 800,000 franchise locations out there. Mm. So the franchisees, so that's franchisee locations, not franchisors, but almost 8,000 franchise locations with about 17,000 new locations established in 2022.
So I know we're starting to wind down, but this question like kind of popped in my head. It's that average number that a startup will last about 5 years. Most of them barely make it 5 years. If you compare that to somebody going into the franchise world, what does that look like?
That's my next statistic.
Oh, see, I'm connected to your brain too.
So according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics, 20% of all businesses will close within 2 years.
Wow.
38% close after 4 years. In franchising, 92% of businesses are still open after 2 years. And 85% are open after 4 years.
Hmm. Wow. That's
fantastic.
Impressive. Yeah. Yeah. And then add the veteran factor onto it. If you're a veteran, right?
Yeah.
And your success rate's even higher.
Just because you have something to lean on.
You know how to follow directions.
Yeah, follow directions. That's really true. I coached somebody who had a franchise in one of the communities nearby, and this franchise is still widely represented. I'm not going to say who. I think they're fine, but he was doing some things from a management leadership standpoint at his location that ultimately snowballed to the point he was in a really bad spot by the time he called me in to work with him. He didn't have much rope left, and unfortunately he had to sell it, right? They found someone else to come in and take it over. And mm-hmm. And that's why, again, I think the due diligence that happens, Gary, in working with you, with someone like you on the front end to really help people understand what it looks like, what it's going to take, what's the support you're going to receive, what kind of systems are in place. That's really important to the overall process.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
And, you know, when you mentioned you had a friend, colleague or a friend that had to sell his franchise, and that's another component too. I do have access to resales in the franchise industry as well.
Yeah.
So often I'm showing somebody an existing business that's for sale, that doesn't have to be a new startup.
Yeah. And so that location is still open, right? Under another franchisee. It would be my first question, Gary. It'd be my first question to you. Why did the person sell that just entered into this? If you knew, you know, I would ask that. I would want to know.
Now you got your sale angle with him. You need a semi-permanent pre-owned franchise.
At a low cost.
At a low cost.
Big investment opportunity. Federal Trade Commission wants you to tell me that I'm going to make six figures while I sleep at home.
You find that for him, Gary. And I want 10% commission.
Jay and a couple million other people want that.
I know that's true. I know that's true.
All right. We need to be mindful of time. So what do you have? Because I'm going to end this.
No, I think, Gary, look, Donna and I have been doing this a little while now, and I have nothing but great things to say about every single one of the episodes we've done prior to this. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Something that I'm really interested in. I think I'm interested in all of them we bring in, but I thought what you brought to the table was very insightful. I hope our listeners take the time to really vet it, find the value in it. And if they have that inkling, just having an initial conversation with you, I think would be a great place to start.
Yeah.
So I really don't have any other comments. I just really enjoyed our conversation.
a 10 to 15 minute initial conversation.
Fantastic.
And to see if it's a fit.
Yeah.
I love it. And his contact info will be all in the summary.
Yeah. So they'll be able to see it and contact it.
So, Gary, do you have anything, any last words before I wrap it up?
No, I had a great time, and thank you guys so much. This was so much fun, and I just love helping people, giving back. You know, that's what I feel my purpose is to help and give back, and I just enjoy doing that.
Help awesome. Them.
And now we got a place to stay when we go to Naples.
And we're good. That's right. Do you have a boat?
I'll send it up to get you.
Oh, even better. So I actually want to end it with a quote. Can you believe that?
Oh, this is
Jay
good.
Is like the quote person. Like, he pulls them out of thin air, and I'm all like, uh-huh. It's actually Gary's quote.
Oh, I like it.
I stalked him on LinkedIn a little. So in his LinkedIn profile there, he actually said this, and I went, well, that summarizes this well.
Hell, I'm interested. I can't.
I think it's your quote. You tell me if it's someone else's, but it says, be in business for yourself, not by yourself.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the ultimate benefit of the franchise.
Yeah.
In business for yourself, but not by yourself. You have that team. You have that team of fellow franchisees, like I talked about earlier, the corporate support team. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
I think it just summarized it really. I saw that and I'm like, okay, that's what we're
that's
using.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Good. No, that's good.
See, I had to write it down though. I'm impressed. I'm learning from the master over here, master motivational speaker and DJ, whatever else he does on the side there. So, all right. So, in wrap up here for the audience, if you guys are interested in franchising, please reach out to Gary. I mean, like, what do you have to lose? I mean, really
agree.
Talk to him, see what it's like. Nicest guy. I seriously
knowledgeable.
Cold email to him, and he's like, okay, let's go. So you can't ask for better than that. So from Jay and I to all of you guys out in the community there, specifically the veteran community, we can't thank you enough for listening to our podcast. Please engage. If you have questions, feel free to email all the information and emails will come to us. We will answer them. And we just want to get conversation going, right? So on behalf of all of us here at Beyond the Frontline and Coming Home Well, we want you guys to have an awesome, awesome day.
Bye for now, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Beyond the Frontline, a podcast of Coming Home Well. Join us every other Wednesday. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Follow us on Instagram at @ComingHomeWell_BTS or on Twitter at @ComingHomeWell. Thanks again. And until all are home and all are well.